She said, she explained, that a literary magazine, though not strictly speaking journalism, could use many of the skills I already have. I said, what exactly? She said, well, it's all language, isn't it? I think she used the word communication.
Oh, dear.
She may have done. She may not have done. She said that I would be dealing with some of the best writers of our age, of this age, or any age, in fact. Then she bought another bottle of Dom Perignon and asked me for my initial reactions. Do you want another cup of tea?
And you told her?
I said I'd think about it.
But you haven't made up your mind.
I wanted to ask you what you thought.
Well, what should I say?
Well, that's why I'm asking.
No, Polly.
What?
That isn't why you're asking. We ask for advice only in order to reject it.
I would like your opinion.
Any fool can have an opinion, and usually does.
I see.
What?
You're not going to help me.
I thought if you needed help.
Yes? I do. I need advice. I have been offered an interesting opportunity, a change of direction.
A flat in Paris.
The chance to meet interesting people, new experiences. I have felt for some time that perhaps I would never be anything but a second-rate reporter. I saw myself in my 40s, 50s, still covering wealthy people's weddings, and suddenly, this opportunity. Well, I feel I would be mad to reject it, wouldn't I? There. You have helped me by your silence. I'm going.
Did you say something about another cup of tea?
John, what is the thing?
John.
At rock bottom. I mean, what is the thing?
Don't you think it's time to go?
The thing, Walter, assumes various guises, but at its base, it's always the same.
Pass on the best and leave.
No! You see? And what is the difference between us? You know what it is. You stick when I twist.
You bust.
Why? Why is that? Why do I go on when others turn back? It is because I have seen the thing. And the thing is, our lives are ruled by chance.
You have no more funds, John.
Then you see? You see? This is the thing. That is the point at which you and others like you resign from play. But it is precisely now, on the curve of ruin and failure, that victory is granted.
Or withheld.
Oh, Walter. The blessing that is coming my way. Can't you feel it?
So how did you leave it?
I said I'd contact her by 4 o'clock today.
That should be enough time.
What for?
I've been meaning to talk something over with you.
A case?
Yes, I'd very much like your opinion, Polly.
Is it complex?
That's always been our task, hasn't it?
What?
To uncover the simplicity at the heart. To adhere to the facts at all costs. It's all to do with the quality of our attention. We must look without motive.
We always have a motive, don't we?
Do you?
I'm not sure.
Say it.
The pleasure of solving a puzzle.
Go on.
The satisfaction of making sense of an apparent mystery.
A little further?
Self-esteem, pride, security.
Then the search for security becomes the fact, in which case you will not see the fact you wish to understand.
Then how can we begin?
There is no how.
Then what?
Don't get involved in techniques. The quality of attention, I said, Polly, without motive. Oh.
What?
You may be too busy to think about this.
No.
What about Mrs. Vanderbilt?
Oh, she can wait.
I don't want to trespass on your private life, Polly.
I'll let you know.
If you're sure.
Yes!
Two men, two young blades, friends since public school, companions in the roistering life of London clubs and gambling houses.
When?
Last year. Have you ever been to one of these establishments, Polly?
No.
The swish of impossibly thick carpets, the clunk of wooden chips on a green baize table. Everything arranged for your pleasure beneath vast chandeliers.
I once put 2 shillings on the Derby.
Did it win?
No.
No. This is a hushed world. Around the tables, clients are withdrawn in a strange earnestness over games which are both civilized and vicious.
I'll take two.
Two cards, Mr. Ashley.
Only two. And raise.
You're bluffing, Mr. Ashley.
Is that what you think?
That's what I think. I've been watching you.
Then raise.
Oh, I raise. £200.
£200?
It's on the table. Fold or cover. You want to see my cards? They're very good cards.
You're lying.
I'm lying?
I've been watching you.
Ah. Then you must know these cards are good. Well, Mr. Ashley?
Your 200 and my 200. I raise you.
John, please.
The last of your money, Mr. Ashley.
Well? You may leave if you like.
Your 200. And I think I'll raise 200.
I don't have it.
You already owe me money.
I know that.
Fold your cards away, then.
Take it. Show me your cards.
I don't have to show you my cards.
Show them to me. Nothing.
On the contrary, very good cards.
The Harwood Club.
Yes?
You've heard of it?
Hanover Square?
Yes. It's another country potty. Requiring only the passport of wealth to enter.
Full of sports and debutantes.
And a strand, not in all of them, but some, the well-documented thread of self-destruction. When you look into their faces behind the smiles, you see fear. What is that?
Fear of what?
I don't know. Fear of themselves.
Why should...
Behind the excitement, like children who begin screaming and can't stop.
Who?
And long to be stopped.
Who was screaming?
And long for Mummy or Daddy to come and wake them from the nightmare of their happiness.
Who was screaming?
Their victim.
Help! Help me! For the love of God! Help me, someone!
And then came running the policeman.
Tell me.
Last year, February, a foggy evening, deep, dank, even on the walls of the houses of the rich. Park Crescent.
Ah, very nice.
At 3 a.m., residents are awoken by shouts, screams, and two shots.
And?
A body. The constable trips over it in the fog. He turns it over and shines his torch. A face both white and purple, its tongue reaching outwards like a creature from its hole, a scream frozen in the night air.
Strangled?
Yes.
So, the shots?
Two shots.
Who fired them?
Who could have fired them, Polly?
The murderer? Were there bullet holes in the body?
No.
So, he might have fired, missed... And then strangled him, or strangled first, tried to finish him off with a gun, and then missed.
Yes. Or?
The victim had the gun, tried to shoot his attacker, presumably missed. Any blood?
No, but the pistol was there. It was a pistol, did I say?
Where?
On the ground, by the body. The shots had attracted a few residents who stood peering over the constable's shoulder. They identified him. Edouard Latigue.
Well?
He'd come from the Harwood Club, walked, and was nearly home when he was killed.
Was he a sport?
Not exactly. In fact, he was something of an outsider. A stockbroker. Wealthy.
A foreign merchant?
In fact, yes. You've moved on to motive now, have you?
He was an outsider. And aristocracy always envies new money.
So you think...
A ritual slaughter, a rite of initiation by a crazed group of tops.
A little pink press for us, Polly. I'm sorry to disappoint you. Not so much imagination.
Robbery? Not robbery.
Monsieur Lateague had been very lucky on the blackjack table. Now, when he left the Harwood, he was carrying the best part of £6,000.
And when they found him?
His pockets were empty.
Oh.
You're disappointed?
It's so banal.
Well, nonetheless, a man wins a large sum of money at a casino. The club is crowded and many people see him pocket his winnings and leave the club.
When was that?
At 2 a.m.
So the suspect...
was either in the Harwood that night or was tipped off by someone in the club.
Why?
Yes?
Why were there shots fired?
The wrong question at this moment, Pauline.
Whose gun was it, then?
Yes.
Well?
It belonged to a man named John Ashley.
John, I just want to say...
No!
I just want to speak to him. Can I do that?
Let him.
Let me, do you hear? Lateague. How much do I owe you?
I haven't counted.
Count?
You want me to look at my book?
Yes.
Is that what you want? You want to be sure how much you owe me?
You see?
15.
It can't be.
£1,500.
No.
You asked. That's what it is.
Come on. He's lying.
Mr. Ashley.
All right.
I'm not calling the debt in just yet.
No? I'll tell you what. Well, what about this? I'll be frank with you. I do not have access to those funds.
No?
I do not. It is not a case of asking my father, because my father would say no. You see? Here's an offer. We make one last bet on anything.
Oh, Mr. Ashley.
Yes? If you win, you can decide what you want. It's an offer.
If I win, I can have what I want?
Yes.
I've got what I want.
Why don't we go?
Because I'm offering him...
You're not offering me anything.
What do you want?
And if you win...
We cancel whatever I owe you. I'll offer you something, shall I? I'll tell you what. My inheritance. Everything. I'll give it to you.
You haven't got it.
It's coming.
Listen, John.
What? Do you want it?
What's the bet?
This is it.
You can't.
What does that mean? I'm thinking. Listen. The bet has to be without meaning, as far as possible. It has to offer a set of circumstances in which chance rules. Pure chance. In which you say and I say something will happen at a place, at a time, something... Example of what I mean. No. Let's say... Where do you live?
Park Crescent.
Are you going there when you leave here?
What is it?
You don't want to tell me?
Oh, I'm going home, so...
All right. A place. A set of circumstances I will give, if I think of it. And you choose the time. Now... Fog. This evening, yes?
So?
It comes and goes. It may be foggy now. It may have lifted. Why don't we bet on it? I will meet you in Park Crescent. You choose the time. If it's foggy when we meet, you win my inheritance. If it isn't, you cancel what I owe you.
This is winter, Ashley. The fog is thick.
Fine, then have it the other way. If the fog is still down, we cancel my debt. If it's lifted when we meet, you will have everything I inherit. Well, isn't that a bet?
So, what is fog? I mean, we could argue about that. Is it down, isn't it? You know?
How do we decide?
Well...
I will stand behind you. 10 feet away, I will whistle. I will take up my position. You will turn and point. If you can see me, we will say the fog has lifted. If you cannot, then we will consider it down. Is that a bet?
Yes.
Then name the time, Mr. Lateague. Give me a time.
What kind of man was Ashley?
As I said,
a lunatic?
A certain amount of inbreeding, certainly, but I don't think lunacy. No, he was an extremist, I would say. Someone whose life was spent in the pursuit of extreme measures which he took because not taking them was worse for him.
That's what I said, a lunatic.
You mustn't be so critical of our ruling classes, Polly. Centuries of power and privilege may render a person erratic, but not necessarily insane.
So it was his pistol?
Yeah. The jury were shocked when they heard that.
The jury? You mean...
They weren't all like you, eager to decapitate him on the grounds of his pedigree.
He was arrested, is that...
Yes. The forces of law and order considered it open and shut. Which, of course, is their favourite kind of case. Anything that saves paperwork has their vote. Yes, but it wasn't going to be that straightforward. Not when they got into court.
Constable Funnell, you were the first police officer on the scene on the night, or rather the morning, of February the 6th. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Please tell the court what you heard and saw.
I was on patrol in Portland Place, walking north, when I heard shouts, and that was quickly followed by two shots.
First the shouts, and then the shots.
Yes, sir.
And what did you do?
Well, I blew my whistle to summon assistance, and I ran towards where the shots had come from.
Which led you into Park Crescent?
Yes, sir.
Go on.
It was a very foggy night.
Yes.
And there was no sound when I got there, so I had to shine my torch around. And I found a body.
A body later identified as Edward Lateague, a resident of 30 Park Square West. Go on, Constable Funnell.
The man was dead. Next to his body was a pistol.
Tell the court, as a good and efficient policeman, you searched the area.
Yes, sir.
And what else did you find?
I found two keys over by the iron gate, which leads into the tunnel.
Yes.
That joins the Marylebone Road.
And were these keys later identified as belonging to the deceased, Edward Lateen?
One was a key to his house, 30 Park Square West, and the other was the key to the iron gate.
Was the iron gate locked?
It was open, sir.
Do you regularly patrol that area? Is that your beat?
Yes, sir.
So you were on duty earlier that evening?
Yes, sir. I came on duty at 10 that night.
And you patrol back and forth, keeping your wary and experienced eye out for villainy and so forth? I'm sure you do. Now, towards 3 a.m., you hear shouts and two shots. You were on your way back to the square then?
Yes.
And presumably you'd already been through the square several times that evening?
Every half hour.
So you were there at 2:30 or thereabouts?
Yes, sir.
Please tell the court what you heard.
I was leaving the square, going south, when I picked up the sound of a man's voice.
Coming from the square?
That's right. I looked back and I could see two men together, standing close and talking.
You could hear them talking?
I heard one man say, "It's a question of time, Mr. Lateague. If you will wait, if you will only wait, my father will pay. You will lose nothing by it."
"It's a question of time, Mr. Lateague. If you wait, if you will only wait, my father will pay. You will lose nothing by it." And the other man, you heard his reply?
Well, I've moved on by then, sir. I don't know what the other gentleman said to him.
No further questions.
Your witness, Mr. Tucker?
I have no questions of this witness, Your Honor.
I know where this is going.
Do you?
It looks bad for Ashley.
But?
Therefore, he's innocent.
And can you...
get him off?
And is this a game?
What?
You have sometimes accused me of discussing the fate of human beings in terms appropriate to a parlor game. I'm repeating it to you.
No, I'm in earnest. I think I can get him off.
Then go ahead.
I mean, it's all too obvious. Is life like that?
Life? Life, Polly?
It's too pat, isn't it?
I think life can be surprisingly pat and banal and predictable.
Hold on, may I?
You were saying?
Ashley owes Lateague money.
£1,500.
He announces it almost. Does he? And then a very public argument followed by an outrageous bet.
And who heard that?
Many. You're saying it didn't happen?
I'm saying stay with the facts. He has a motive. His pistol is found next to the body.
And?
I don't understand.
It wasn't used to kill.
We don't know that. It was fired twice.
He gave it to Latigue, didn't he?
Did he?
Didn't he?
Only Heatherall was close enough to see.
Why would he invent that story?
Many reasons. To protect his friend, for a start.
Is that what you're saying?
Why so fast, Polly?
Fast?
I sense an overhasty approach.
I said I was in earnest.
Perhaps.
What?
I was wrong to drag you into this. Your decision. Is it weighing heavily?
Oh, I don't think so. I would like to find the answer to this.
Before you go?
Yes. Yes. Oh. Can't we go on? Can't we just go on?
Yes. Let's deal with the policeman's evidence.
Two men overheard talking.
Two men talking together.
What?
The facts, Polly.
All right, standing together. One of the men says, asks the other to wait to collect his debt that his father will pay.
He cautions patience, yes.
Did the police find anyone else who was in debt to Latigue?
No.
So, a half hour before Latigue is murdered, he is seen with Ashley, and Ashley is asking, no, begging for more time.
And?
Obviously, Ashley did it. Therefore, by the inverse law of probability transference, someone else did it. Eh? Mm-hmm. Joking, just joking.
The right question shakes the facts, Polly. What is the right question?
Is Ashley stupid?
No, he isn't. And one more.
Why didn't the defense lawyer ask any questions?
Good.
Mr. Heatherall, you are a close friend of the defendant.
Yes, I am.
You know him very well?
I think I do.
You think you do? You think you do? And in what state of mind was he on the night of February the 5th?
He was agitated, perhaps you might say.
What was he agitated about? Was he agitated about debts he owed?
I don't know if that was the principle.
Was he agitated about his gambling debts? Yes or no?
Well, clearly he was worried.
And yet, heavily in debt, he continued gambling. Was he in an agitated state because of his intense wish to recoup his losses and his growing realization that he would fail to do so? Would you say that...
Shall we let him answer, Sir Andrew?
I apologize.
He was under great pressure, yes.
Thank you. Would you say your friend was addicted to gambling?
Yes.
And you had many times tried to dissuade him from gambling?
Yes.
And indeed had tried to dissuade him on the evening of February the 5th?
That's true.
However, he went to the Harwood Club against your advice and there lost heavily to Mr. Latigue. Is that correct?
Yes.
What time did he leave the club?
We left at about 1:40.
You left with him?
Yes. I walked with Mr. Ashley as far as New Bond Street, and we parted there.
And where did you understand that the defendant was going?
He said he wanted to clear his head, and he intended to walk along Piccadilly. I went back to the Harwood.
I see. Were you worried about your friend when you left him?
No, as I say, he was calmer. He was much calmer, and I knew he was all right. I felt he was all right, anyway. It was... With John, these things blow up and then pass. I wasn't worried.
Thank you.
Mr. Tucker?
No questions, my lord.
The Crown prosecution was in the hands of Sir Andrew Laidlaw. A face to make children cry, certainly. But as lawyers go, no fool. He felt he had his man.
Well, yes.
The evidence kept piling up, don't you think so? And yet the defense lawyer, Toby Tucker, stayed sitting on his ample haunches throughout.
What was he up to?
Tucker was a second stringer.
Meaning?
Fighting against Laidlaw, he was, in boxing parlance, punching well over his weight. Tucker's reputation is earnest ineptitude. If you want to save your life, hire someone else.
So why...
I listened to the evidence, Polly. I counted the oohs and ahs in the public gallery as overwhelming evidence was piled on overwhelming evidence.
But you weren't convinced.
What did you call it? The law of what?
Secondary transference...
Yes.
Something. I don't know what I said.
It wasn't that exactly. It was... I felt I was watching a play in which everyone knew their lines and in which all the characters acted convincingly enough, and yet my dominant feeling was disbelief.
So you waited?
Mm. So I waited.
Mr. Cowper, you are the defendant's butler, are you not?
I am, sir.
And taking your mind back to the night of 5th, 6th of February, you remember your master going out initially?
He went out, sir. That's right, I remember. At about 10 o'clock.
Did he indicate at all, Mr. Cowper, when you might see him again?
No.
Very good. Then when did you see your master again?
He came in at about 10 to 2. He went again almost straight away.
Did he say why he had made such a brief visit?
He said he'd come to check some business papers.
Did he take anything else with him?
I don't know, sir.
Do you recognize this pistol, Mr. Cowper?
Yes, sir.
Where have you seen it before?
I've seen it many times before, sir. In its case, where it's kept.
In its case, where it's kept. And where is that, Mr. Cowper?
In Mr. Ashley's bedroom, sir. It's his pistol.
No further questions, my lord.
Mr. Tucker? If you have questions, I would ask them now.
I have no questions, Your Honor.
You do not seem to be availing yourself of the opportunity to cross-examine prosecution witnesses. You know what you're doing, do you?
I do, my lord. I have no questions of this witness.
Very well. Next witness, please, Sir Andrew.
I kept my eye on Mr. Tucker. No smoke screen, no leaping to his feet, no attempts to divert the jury, to undermine the witnesses. Nothing.
But the pistol?
Yes. How did he get to the scene of the murder?
The murderer brought it.
In which case...
I mean, despite your unease...
Yes.
Ashley was going to the gallows.
No, he wasn't.
Mr. Ashley, you have heard the evidence against you. You have heard as we have. Constable Funnell state that he saw you at 2:30, engaged in urgent conversation with Mr. Lateague. What have you to say to that?
That wasn't me.
You did not speak to Mr. Lateague?
No.
You did not say, it's a question of time, Mr. Lateague. If you wait, if you will only wait, my father will pay. You will lose nothing by it.
No, I didn't.
You're suggesting that it was someone else?
Certainly. It wasn't me.
When did you last see Mr. Lateague?
At the club, the Harwood, just before I left with Walter Hetherell.
At about 20 to 2?
I don't know, something like that.
You seem to be taking this very lightly, Mr. Ashley.
I just don't remember the time. My friend said 20 to 2, fine. And that was the last I saw of Lateague.
You did not see him later?
No.
You did not intercept him on Park Crescent?
No.
Did you argue with Mr. Lateague?
When?
At any time.
Yes, we...
About what?
About money. He wouldn't let me gamble.
You owed him money?
Yes.
He was within his rights to deny you play. You are obsessed with gambling, aren't you? If you cannot gamble, you become incensed, don't you, Mr. Ashley?
Not exactly.
Mr. Lateague prevented you from doing the one thing you love, the one thing you live for. You became angry.
Yes.
You became violent.
No.
You wanted to kill him. To kill him would give you his winnings, would turn your loss into gain. It would cancel your debt. But above all, it would allow you the sweet pleasure of revenge on a man who had thwarted your obsessive passion for gambling.
No.
After parting from your friend in New Bond Street at about 10 to 2, you hurried home. You told your butler you had come to check papers, but in fact, you had come to arm yourself.
No, that isn't true.
You hurried back to Park Crescent, and under cover of the fog, you attacked Mr. Lateague and strangled him. As he was dying, he screamed out in his terror for help, but you showed him no mercy. You took out your pistol, you shot at him, twice. Missing both times, and fearful, hearing the alarmed calls of residents and a policeman's whistle, you dropped the pistol and fled. You made off with the money into the night, sparing not one thought for your victim. Is that not true?
It is not true.
I put it to you that it is true, that you committed this callous and calculated crime with one motive only, financial gain. And carried out your plan?
No.
And carried it out, I say, without mercy. Without feeling and without remorse.
I... I didn't do it, you know. I didn't exactly rejoice at his existence. I mean, I owed him money. I didn't kill him.
Can you explain this? How did your pistol... It is your pistol, isn't it?
Yes.
How did your pistol come to be lying on the ground next to the dead body of Mr. Lateague?
I gave it to him.
You gave it to him?
Certainly. In the club. I had it with me. I often carry it with me when it's foggy. I gave it to him. To protect himself.
You were concerned for his safety. Is that your story?
I gave it to him.
And the shots? The two bullets fired?
I imagine he tried to use it to defend himself.
You wish us to believe that you were so concerned for the health of a man you despised that you gave him your gun?
That's what happened.
The contempt you showed for your victim's life, you now show for the credulity of this court. I have no further questions for this man, your lordship.
Do you intend to question your client, Mr. Tucker? I dare not think you will not, although on your current form you may not.
I do wish to question him, my lord.
Ah, very good, Mr. Tucker.
Mr. Ashley, you parted company with Mr. Heatherall at 10 to 2.
Yes.
What did you do then?
I went home. I had to check some business letters that I was expecting.
Your butler said you went out again soon afterwards.
That's correct.
Where did you go?
I went to my club.
The Harwood?
No, I went to the Talbot.
The Talbot Club on Piccadilly, is that right?
Yes.
And what did you do there?
I played bridge.
For how long?
Till late.
And when did you arrive at the Talbot?
At about 2:10.
And when did you leave?
About 5 a.m.
And so, from 2 o'clock until 5 o'clock, you were playing cards at the Talbot. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
Did anybody see you during this time?
Of course. The club was crowded.
I mean, can you name one person who saw you and can testify to your being there?
Yes, I can.
My lord, I must protest. My learned friend is introducing a witness without prior reference to the prosecution. And a
Mr. Tucker?
I beg your pardon, your worship, but the witness, whom my learned friend may wish to cross-examine in good time, has only just returned to the country. We had sought his return, but until this morning, I had no firm knowledge that he would be here.
Sir Andrew?
Very well, my lord.
Proceed then, Mr. Tucker. Who is your witness?
I call Anthony Lateague.
And there stepped into the witness box a tall, gaunt-faced young man whose pallor alone was expressive of a profound discomfort.
Tucker had Lateague's son.
Had him and used him.
And did they allow it?
A victim's son to be called as a defense witness? Underhand, perhaps, but permissible. And, of course, it had its effect.
Ashley's alibi.
Yes, Poré.
Tight, eh?
Had the Titanic's rivets been as tight, it might not have gone down. For the first time during the case, Mr. Tucker smiled.
Mr. Lateague, I need not express to you our heartfelt commiserations at the loss of your father. His brutal murder is something you will never forget. However, the fact of his murder does not mean that the defendant, my client, is guilty.
I would be obliged if you would come to the questions, Mr. Tucker.
I have 3 questions only, Your Worship. Mr. Lateague, were you in the Talbot Club in Piccadilly on the night of the 5th and 6th February between the hours of 2:10 and 5 o'clock in the morning?
Yes, I was.
Could you speak up, please?
Yes, I was.
And did you play cards with another man during that time?
Yes.
I would be obliged if you would listen to my next question very carefully, for the life of a man depends on your answer. Do you see that man, the man you played cards with, in the court today? Mr. Lateague?
He is sitting over there. I played cards with the defendant, John Ashley.
The public gallery swallowed hard as though with one throat. The jury sighed. They were out for 10 minutes, and their verdict, when they delivered it, surprised no one.
He walked.
I looked at John Ashley as the judge apologized to him and spoke the words that released him.
His expression?
Yes.
What was it?
Blank. A complete blank. And then I knew.
Help! Help me! For the love of God, help me, someone!
What do you think, Polly?
What do I think?
Well, the case unraveled. Now, either a guilty man had been released, in which case how was it done, or someone else did it, in which case who and why.
You said you saw something. Did Walter Heatherall do it?
The faithful friend?
He had a motive.
Did he?
Loyalty.
Certainly, that's what the police thought.
And?
They arrested Heatherall 2 days later.
So, you disagreed?
Talk to me, Polly. Do you have time? It is delightful to me to talk with you, Polly. Have we not shared many intellectual adventures?
What?
Walk with me.
What do you mean?
Walk with me, Polly, through the bright landscape of deduction. You say, was it Heatherall? Walk.
Heatherall leaves the club with Ashley at 1:40, and then 10 minutes later...
Yes.
...they part. Ashley goes home, and Heatherall returns to the club. Why?
Yes?
To keep an eye on Lateague. In his evidence, he said that Lateague was just leaving the club when he arrived. What if that wasn't true? What if Lateague stayed at the club until 2:30, and when he left, Heatherall followed him to Park Crescent, and strangled and robbed him?
The shots?
Fired by Lateague, as Ashley said. Am I wrong?
Oh, dear.
What?
It's 3:50, Polly.
Yes?
Mrs. Vanderbilt will be waiting for your answer.
I said, am I wrong?
I would hate, Polly, in the future for you to say that I had delayed you or held you back or...
I want to know. I want to know how it ended. Tell me.
That I don't know, Polly.
You don't? You said you saw. Why don't you know?
You asked me how it ended. I say to you, I don't know. It hasn't ended.
Did you see him? Did you see him, Walter?
Yes. I wish you hadn't...
What? Are you getting moral on me? Did you see his face? You see? He is a gambler. That is, he's like me. You know, in a way, he's closer to me than you are. Because of that. Because another factor of a gambler, even when he's winning, he's won everything. If someone puts a proposition to him, put it his way, a bet, he can't help but be interested. You see, it isn't after all the winning. It isn't about accumulation of money. Did I say that? It's about the quivering thrill of taking an action whose end you cannot see. Makes you feel alive. Something we could say we did. One thing. We took a chance. We were not ordinary. What is it?
I looked at his face in the dock as he was leaving.
Ashley?
Yes.
You said blank. It was blank.
Yes. The whole time. He had worn it the whole time.
He knew he was going to go free because of the alibi.
No, I mean something else. He was hidden, hiding, withdrawn in a world we could not imagine. Polly, I knew then that he had planned it all. I did not know how.
He was in the Talbot when the murder was... I mean, Lateek's son, for heaven's sake, was his witness. I don't...
That's right. He would have needed an accomplice.
So Heatherall was involved?
Yes. Though I don't think he knew he would end up in the courts.
Tell me.
Ashley and Heatherall left the Harwood Club together.
Murder. Wouldn't that raise us to the ranks of the truly exceptional?
We'd be found out.
No, listen. We walk up to Bond Street. Then you come back here, where you'll be seen. I will go home and let Cowper see me. I will get my pistol.
I mean, they'll know. Who else wants to kill Lateague?
Exactly. I will be the suspect. I must be the suspect. I must be arrested and tried. I will give them the evidence. My pistol, fired and left by the body. Don't you see? Oh, Walter, we will be kings at the moment, won't we? We will be princes.
Then who will...
Don't worry. If you're going to worry, then you can't play. I'll do the killing. I'll kill him. And then afterwards, you will bring him back to life.
What do you mean?
You will lift him up and hold him and talk to him, just as the constable passes by, who will mark the time. He will then tell the court that he saw Lettigue alive at 2:30. I will be in the Talbot Club. At 3 a.m., you will fire 2 shots and begin shouting. You will drop the gun and let yourself into the tunnel to Marylebone Road. You see? Isn't it perfect? Walter?
Perfect.
Yes. The bet that Ashley had made with Lettigue in the club played its part. I have no doubt that Lettigue gave the time 2 a.m. when they would meet and examine the weather. And that night, no doubt, as Ashley knew, Lettigue's son, the star witness, would be in his club, the Talbot, where Ashley would find him and play cards with him, having only just strangled his father. And Heatherall, challenged in his dullness, as Ashley knew, went along, not foreseeing that he would be arrested.
But Ashley knew.
Oh, yes. That mask is capable of anything.
Why did he do it?
I don't know. To see if he could. Is that an explanation?
And Heatherall will hang?
Probably.
But won't he tell the police?
What? That he and Ashley conspired together to kill Lettigue? But Ashley has already been tried and released and cannot be tried again.
So?
I don't think Heatherall will leave it there.
What can he do from the condemned cell?
Prisons reflect the society that has created them, Polly. Money talks there as elsewhere. I suspect he'll buy his revenge before he hangs.
Gosh.
Oh, dear.
Now what?
It's gone for. Mrs. Vanderbilt?
Yes. Well.
What will you do?
Where's the cake you ordered? Don't say Gillian's let you down.
Ah, Polly.
I'll be right back.
Who's that? No. No! Help! Help me! Oh, no!
In The London Mystery by Michael Butt, based on a story by Baroness Orczy, Bernard Hepton was the man in the corner and Suzanne Burton was Polly. Ashley was played by Alan Cox, Heatherall by Rupert Penry-Jones, Lettigue by Michael Tudor Barnes, Laidlaw by Stephen Thorne, Tucker by Jonathan Keeble, and Funnel by Ian Brooker. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The Tea House Detective, directed by Celia DeWolf, was a Fiction Factory production for BBC Radio 4.